We have just been listening to Parity Release 311.205, Leopold Gadowski's transcription of Chopin's Black Key Etude No. 12A in G-flat for the left hand alone, played by pianist Ivan Illich. And I have him on the phone with me right now. Hello, Ivan.
Hi, Cara.
And I have to say that this is just a jaw-dropping piece of work, this CD of all of these complicated works for the left hand alone. I took the CD and I ran around to people and said, you've got to hear this. This is just amazing. And they would hear it and say, really? Really? That's just the left hand? It's no double tracking or anything? That's incredibly impressive. So let's start there.
Okay.
Really? Just the left hand?
It's fun seeing how people react based on whether they hear the piece first live in a concert or on a CD. And one of the things that I really wanted to do with this recording is not make a big deal out of the fact that it's the left hand on the cover. So I wanted people to just listen to the music and decide whether they liked it first before getting into the details of how it's played.
Well, that's very noble of you.
It's fun also for it to be surprised. But more than anything, I think that the biggest reason why people don't play these pieces more is because they're afraid it's going to be too strange for the people who are in the audience.
Really?
Yes. I think that it's kind of intimidating for a performer to do something that's too different from the mainstream. And that's something that in classical music people fight with all the time. You can do something a little bit different, but not too different. And this is definitely outside of, one or two standard deviations of different, just playing with one hand.
Yes.
I think that's a good thing. And I think that there needs to be more of that idea. Whether you play Gadowski or you do something else that's different, there needs to be a little bit more, kind of stretching the space of what's possible.
Well, that makes it an artistic event, not just a commercial performance.
Exactly.
Now, I know there's the instance of works being written for the left hand by a composer when he has injured his right hand, most famously perhaps in the case of Schumann. But is that the case of the Gadowski works?
Well, it's interesting because I researched for a long time before I found the reason, at least the reason that's given when in the biography of Gadowski, which is that he had just experienced, a trauma in his life, which was he was very excited by the Chicago Fair and recommended it to some family members. And they took the train from New York westward towards Chicago, and they were on a train that had a terrible accident, and over 100 people died. And it was all because Gadowski recommended to his family members to go that they passed away, in a way. So he felt incredibly guilty, and he was trying to get his mind off of that. And it says a lot about him, the type of person that he was, that he tried to make up something as difficult as possible in order to get his mind off something. So he was working on the Chopin Etudes and trying to find a new way of playing them, the regular ones. And then he kind of came up with an interesting solution and tried to apply it to the left hand to see if it would work too. And when he was trying it out, he realized that the left hand solution worked even better. So that kind of intrigued him. And he said to himself, maybe if I transfer all of this right hand difficult stuff to the left hand, maybe it'll, with a little bit of work, maybe the left hand will be even more flexible. And it's kind of like a philosophical challenge, which I think is really interesting. The idea of it is very interesting.
Yes. From the notes on the CD, and by the way, marvelous notes on this CD. I take it you wrote them?
That's right. Thank you. Yeah.
It seemed almost as if it were some sort of philosophical viewpoint of Gadowski's, that the left hand is not just intended to accompany the right hand. So I'm
Absolutely.
Going to prove it. So one of my questions then is, as you look at the music itself, is it basically just the right hand of the score taken and superimposed over the left hand, or are there reductions made?
It's a little bit of both. And in order to answer that question, I was curious about this myself, actually, because you learn the music and it all makes sense, and you kind of wonder how he did it. So what I did was I made some transcriptions of my own of music for the left hand, French songs, as a matter of fact. It's something I want to do for years. just to do transcriptions, and as an added challenge, I decided to do it for the left hand. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of got a feeling for what it's like to do that. And I guess what you do is you start with the original score, and you see how much you can play with one hand, which, you know, obviously is not that much, but you'd be surprised how much you can do. There's, you know, maybe half of it. And then you start to try to come up with tricks to make it sound like everything's there. And that work is very, very interesting. And Godofsky's extremely clever when it comes to that kind of thing. But it's not easy. Doing it myself helped me learn more about my instrument than I knew before.
I have to say that that was part of what was charming about the notes that you wrote, was your frank admission that working on these things taught you things that you were missing in your own left-hand work.
Mm.
You talked about how it showed you what you needed to work on, the elements that you felt were missing. At whatever level you're at, there's always something you want to be working on and improving. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, there's so many. I guess one of the things that really drew me to this repertoire also, in addition to everything else, was definitely the challenge. And it was the fact that, I guess one of the dangers of any musician, for any musician rather, is that after like maybe 20 years of playing the instrument, you start to kind of, you have your own bag of tricks. I know this is true with jazz musicians in particular, but classical musicians as well, we have our ways of learning music, and we kind of just apply the same machine, whatever works, to different pieces. And that's very helpful. It makes it so that we can approach any kind of music and feel a little bit comfortable. But it's also dangerous because that means you kind of limit yourself expressively.
Sort of almost locking yourself into a technique?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of where I was going with that. If you use the same kind of motions, the same kind of gestures, let's say, then the same kind of sound will tend to come out of the instrument, and in a way, you choose your own limitations.
Hmm.
So that's something I've become increasingly wary of during my career, because I've kind of realized, watching myself develop, that you tend to rely on things that are habits, good habits, hopefully. But when I was confronted with this repertoire, I realized that they wouldn't work. my little bag of tricks was useless. I just really felt like a beginner again. On the one hand, that was infuriating. And on the other hand, I thought to myself, well, if I can find a new bag of tricks to work on this music, then, how much better of a musician will I be? So that was really intriguing for me.
Of course you can't see, but I'm smiling so broadly because I think the effect on anyone who plays any instrument, listening to this, knowing that this is being played with just the left hand, well, I told you, I went home and I had a magnificent practice session. So listening to this, you just think, I really have to practice. Of course, you have the conflicting feeling, maybe I should just stop playing. Somebody is this magnificent.
No, I hope that's not true.
I think, well, that's the dynamic. If someone else can play that brilliantly, why bother?
I know what you mean. Growing up and also, it's rarer now, but I still hear some things sometimes where, like, someone will play a piece, and I'll just say to myself, I never want to play that piece because that person just did such a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
Why bother trying? So I can empathize with that. And I think that it's important for people to admit that they feel that way, no matter what level you're at. I think that you are limited by your own sense of perception. So, this is something I haven't talked about yet, but I have a friend who is a good cook, but he thinks he's a really good cook. He thinks he's like a Michelin star cook. And the thing is, he can't tell the difference between his cooking and a Michelin star cook. So for him, he's the same level. And what's interesting about that to me is you're kind of limited by whatever you can perceive. So for example, I'm perceived to have a much higher level of, ear training or something than somebody else. But the fact is that, I have my own limits too, and I can't get better than that except little by little. And everyone's that way. And this, it's the same for a beginner.
Oh, yes. And the recognition of that limit, whatever it is to be able to recognize that is so important for the growth of any artist in any field, to see where your limits are. So that's what you can work on. And that's why it's so important to hear artists over a span of time as they mature. But we're going to take a break right now and listen to more of this marvelous CD. We'll be listening to Chopin Etude No. 23 in A-flat, the Aeolian Harp, and Chopin Etude No. 43 in C-sharp minor, The Tempest, transcribed by Leopold Gadowski, played by our friend here, Ivan Illich.
Wonderful.
We just heard two of Leopold Godowsky's Chopin Etude transcriptions for the left hand alone, number 23 in A-flat, the Aeolian harp, and number 43 in C-sharp minor, the Tempest, played by piano virtuoso Ivan Illich. And Ivan, I wanted to take a step back to the beginning now in terms of this. How did you get the idea to approach this piece of music and to record this piece of music? Did you have a manager who said, this is something different you should look at? Or is this something that you stumbled across on your own?
Well, I'd heard about this music for a while. And, there are some works of music that are more famous than they are actually known. You know, like if you hear the first bars of the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, everyone recognizes it, but they don't know what it is. But there are other pieces, like Godowsky's, pianists have heard of it, but they've never actually seen the music, many of them. And I was one of those people. So, that's one of the advantages of whatever year it was, 2008 or 2009. You can find a lot of these scores online now for free.
Yes.
And, not illegally, on like a Wikipedia-type site.
Yes.
So I downloaded one and started reading through it and was kind of disgusted at how difficult it was. And I had a really important concert, actually, I remember, in San Francisco, as a matter of fact. I was returning after a number of years. It wasn't such an important concert in the sense of my career, but it was important to me because my parents were going to be there, and that always makes me really, really nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do something a little bit unusual, and I had the score to the first etude on the album, actually. And so I worked it up more or less to a concert standard and played it as an encore, as kind of a surprise. It was interesting because after the concert, I went and spoke with a bunch of people, and everyone talked about that piece. They were really interested by it. And so I kind of thought to myself, huh, that's interesting. I wasn't expecting that to be, to make them forget the rest of the recital, basically. So then I learned a few more and a few more, and it just kept growing. And then one day I remember very clearly having the idea, it might be interesting to do all of these on one CD, all the left-hand ones, to kind of highlight them. And I remember adding up the number of minutes it would take with my father, actually. I was at home again in California, I think it was a year later. And it came out to be something like in between 70 and 75 minutes, which does fit on a CD. So
yes,
that was kind of like the serendipitous extra little nudge that told myself, hey, might be worth thinking about.
So you didn't start from scratch to learn them all at one clip?
No, and I think that's probably a better way to go, to make the decision a little bit later. It's kind of like if you met someone and you decided you were going to fall in love before you got to know them. It'd be kind of absurd. If I had known how long it was going to take me to do all of them, I never would have, said to myself, oh, I'm going to learn all of the etudes for the left hand. It would have been just way too intimidating.
Now, you have a career that is now an international career, but to fill people in a little bit on your background, from your liner notes and from talking to you, I know your parents are Serbian, but you were born and raised in California, and now you live in Paris? And
yeah, I've been in France for most of my adult life, since I turned 22.
And people may be surprised to know that you studied at Berkeley and you had a double major, math and music.
Yeah. I did university studies like, most people in America, I think. I never thought seriously about going to a conservatory instead of university. At that point, I was way too young to make that decision. I was 17 and I wasn't ready to commit to music.
Ah, but that's a late bloomer for the music world.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I wasn't at Carnegie Hall at the age of 12 or anything like that. But I think that was a good thing for me personally. Mm-hmm. And certainly my career and my aesthetic choices reflect upon my background. So the fact that I studied other things, I'm comfortable writing, more or less. I enjoy doing it. I don't know if I do it well, but at least I try. And I think that is a direct outgrowth from the fact that I went to university where, I had to write papers about philosophy and anthropology and stuff. So I think that was very useful for me, and it gives me confidence to this day, in the sense that I'm not scared of doing something I've never done before. And when I moved to Paris and I, didn't know anyone and I barely spoke the language and was in the conservatory, pretty isolated, I guess, in a lot of ways, I managed to pull through. And I think that was thanks to the fact that I'd already been to university where there were 30,000 students. And all of that was really, really useful. And I didn't really realize that until in retrospect.
So is that what took you to Paris? What drew you to Paris, the Paris Conservatory?
Yeah, I knew that there was, I needed to concentrate on music alone. And I needed to be around people that were a lot better than me, which is, I think, the best way to get good at anything. Just to surround yourself with people that are much better than you. As long as your ego can take it, you make progress really, really quickly. So I arrived in Paris, 22, and many of the kids at the conservatory were significantly younger than me and played significantly better than me. And, you know, I got to work, and I made up a lot of ground very quickly. But it was a wonderful experience, and I learned so much in so little time just because I was so committed.
That's so interesting that you're talking about that. Not only you're starting later than right now, the music business seems to want everyone to be an infant phenomenon. So you started late, and then you have to have the ego to be surrounded by people who are much better and much younger and still keep your focus and keep working.
Well, it's interesting because there is a misconception that it's a race, and it's not. And there are kind of things that people take to be correlations, like if you get good at something young, then you will continue to progress at the same speed forever, and you know you will be constantly ahead of the person that was older. But that's not at all the way learning works. It's really strange the way it works. And your ability to continue to make progress throughout your life depends on your ability to be humble, to see your own faults, and then on the other hand, to believe in yourself enough to keep going. It's pretty unique that someone has those qualities. And just because you play really well when you're 16 doesn't mean that you will continue to play well. I mean, I know a few colleagues that come to mind that probably played their best in their lives at their examinations in Paris. Mm-hmm. And, it's not their fault. They probably could have continued to make progress, but for various reasons, they decided not to, whether it was consciously or not. And, you know, I think that these are questions that everyone who wants to be really good at something is confronted with.
Yes.
But in music, you know, it comes across much more clearly.
So what you're hitting on there is not just a philosophy of life, it's a philosophy of art, a philosophy of religion almost, in terms of
it is. It's
a way of living.
It's a way of life, and it encompasses so many things. And I guess you have to be really careful to get the right dosage, I guess is the right word, of, you know, just persistency and keeping yourself going, but then also keeping yourself, being critical of oneself in a healthy way, you know, to see, keep making progress. But making progress in a linear way is really, really difficult long term. I mean, it's probably the biggest challenge. Just, you know, is everything you do today going to be better than it was yesterday? I mean, how do you do that? I don't know. I don't have the answer. But if you start thinking about it, you can try stuff, and then you have a chance at getting better.
Oh, wow. We are talking so much more than music or art. We're talking about a whole philosophy of life and way of living with piano virtuoso Ivan Illich, who's on the phone with me from Paris. Upon the release of his Parity 311.205 CD of all of Leopold Gadowski's transcriptions of Chopin's Etudes for the Left Hand Alone. The information on this CD will be on our classical music blog. And this has just been released in Paris this week. The Washington Times had a nice article, feature article about it. And we're talking with Ivan today. Right now, we're going to listen together to his Chopin Etude No. 22 in C-sharp minor, Revolutionary, and Etude No. 13 in E-flat minor, the Appassionata, again, the Gadowski's transcriptions to be played for the left hand, by the left hand alone. And then we'll return and talk some more with virtuoso Ivan Illich. Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Cara Dahl-Russell. I'm back with piano virtuoso Ivan Illich in Paris, where he lives. We've been listening to works from his new CD, the Leopold Gadowski Transcriptions of Chopin Etudes, and I had been teasing him that the real question is, can you make a grilled cheese sandwich with your right hand while you play this on the piano with your left hand?
I haven't been able to do grilled cheese yet, but French toast I've got down.
Because that's an act Hollywood can sell.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I should call Spielberg.
So there is that element of almost a parlor trick, the way you said that people hear you play this piece and see you play this piece, and then they kind of forget the rest of the concert. Someone here said, what do you do with your right hand? Do you put it in your lap? Do you put it on top of the piano? What do you do?
Well, I think there are probably a lot of options. And I mean, while I'm practicing, that's one question, right? I mean, that's kind of a, you know, I can do all kinds of things. And maybe I can look on my BlackBerry and see if I have email or something. I don't know. I mean, there are things that I should not be doing that I find myself
like
doing.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly. But generally speaking, the hand is there and just quiet and relaxed. But that's not, you know, not so easy. There might be a way to be expressive with the hand, which is something I played a little bit with in a short film I was in recently. There was an artist who wanted to make a short film, kind of avant-garde, I guess, for mm-hmm. lack of a better word, because he was fascinated by the visual aspect of someone playing with one hand.
So he
wrote a story about it, and maybe I should be conducting myself like Glenn Gould does at the piano.
Exactly. As you said that, I saw Glenn Gould in my mind directing himself with his hand.
It immediately comes to mind. You'll have to ask me again another 10 years when I've been playing these pieces long enough. I'm sure I'll have a better answer.
Just from a practical standpoint, there are so many pieces that are so extremely intensive on the right hand.
True.
Do you use these as a break?
It is. And it's been so interesting in so many ways. I guess it is a chance to relax the right hand. And one of the things that I've realized over the course of the last few years working on this repertoire is how right hand heavy everything is. It's really unbalanced. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are much more aware today because of the fact that everyone's sitting in a computer about things like ergonomics and what's good for you and what's bad for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look at it from that perspective, piano repertoire is kind of dangerous because it's so asymmetrical and you're using the right side of your body, your shoulder, everything, a lot more than the left. Mm-hmm. Violinists have this problem all the time. They hurt themselves because they have one side of the body that's much more tense than the other. So that's been a huge lesson for me. And I didn't have teachers that were very well versed in how the body works for much of my childhood. So I've been learning a lot of the stuff that I should have known earlier. Mm-hmm. And I guess you have to learn that stuff sooner or later.
Let's take a step away from the mechanics of playing and delve into the business aspects of living and working as a musician. Mm-hmm. You tour, you are a virtuoso, and you play concerts. Do you have a manager, an agent? Do you have an entourage? How do you handle the logistics?
I personally don't have any of that. I have worked with managers and agents in the past, and it's more often than not, unfortunately, been kind of a disappointment. And maybe it's because I'm a control freak and I just like to know what's going on all the time. Maybe it's because I am capable of being organized enough so that I don't need anyone's help, or maybe mm-hmm. that's what I try to tell myself. But I find it, you know, in particular in 2012, with all the tools we have, it is possible to do so many things by yourself. And I personally, I'm very interested in the way things work. I'm like, there are certain people, they say, you know, engineers and things, they say, oh, when I was a child, I used to take apart the radio and put it back together. That's not what I was doing. I liked to know how people interact. And as a musician, obviously, I'm with my piano a lot by mm-hmm. myself. And, you know, there are like hours and hours of the day where I'm just by myself. So the time when I'm not doing that, I like to interact with people because it's just interesting. And when you talk to people you don't know who have different experiences than you from around the world, you are confronted with your own values that maybe you weren't aware of. So I guess, to make a long story short, I take great pleasure in just meeting new people. So that makes it so that I don't mind organizing my tour because, I'm not doing it by myself. I'm calling these venues. I'm calling distribution companies or whoever it is I'm calling. They're all people. So I'm, just in contact with people who love music like me and who have a different take on things. So, so far so good. It's worked out really, really well.
And do you also handle your own recording?
I do mostly.
Is Parate your label? Is it a separate label?
It's a separate label, and I was lucky enough to meet a musician, a harpsichordist, who is very similar to me in the sense that he moved from Brazil to France when he was young and has started the record label. He's very entrepreneurial, likes to do everything himself. It's funny. I met him, and we, after the first half hour of the conversation, it was like almost like looking into a mirror because he had done so many of the same things. And then he explained to me how bureaucratic and awful it is to set up a record label in France. And it was at the exact moment when I was going to do it. And when he told me about how horrible it is and how much time he was wasting out of his day doing it, then I said, well, can I record for your record label? Because I can, so I can avoid all this red tape. And it just so happens that he was just about to ask me that. So it's gone really well in that sense. But
wonderful.
The rest of it, the recording itself, I like to control as much as possible. And I've been really lucky to find a great engineer, a great tuner, people like that. And, you just have to go looking for them. These people exist.
I've been speaking with Ivan Illich, piano virtuoso who tours internationally. We've been talking about his new CD that he has just released on the Parate label, the works of Leopold Gadowski. For the left hand alone, transcriptions of Chopin's etudes. Information on that and all the other things we've heard on Just Open today will be on our blog, on our website. And Ivan, I just want to thank you so much for your frank conversation, your ideas about philosophy of life as well as music. It's been a real privilege. Thank you.
Thank you, Cara. Thank you.
And for you, our listeners, the night after I had that interview on the phone with Ivan earlier this week, I realized I had forgotten one of the most obvious questions. Is he left-handed? I sent him an email, and he said, no, he is not. But after working on these pieces, he does a lot more with his left hand, just as a course of nature now, having worked on these works. We'll hear one more in closing. Luminous, Chopin Etude number 16A in G-flat minor, transcribed by Leopold Gadowski, Parity label 311.205, Ivan Illich, piano.